Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren and we are broadcasting from Sweden. The website is redicecreations.com and we are glad that you are here today, tuned in. I hope you've been having a good time here at the end of December. Whether or not you've been enjoying the holidays, a few days off, celebrating or not, it's good to have you here and I hope that you've been having a good time. This is our last program in the year 2007 and we're going to spend this program talking about one aspect of what might be an upcoming issue in the coming year or even further down the road. Our guest is Kent Daniel Bentkowski from kentroversypapers.net. Kent has been with us previously on this program, and today we're going to talk about a paper or a report that Kent wrote back in 2005 called Will You Survive the Coming Financial Crash? That looked into all of this with the economic system, home mortgage and the housing market bubble. Very timely topic to bring up here at the end of the year. We're also going to talk a little bit about the SPP, Security and Prosperity Partnership, or the North American Union Front, so much more on that later on. But let's bring on our guest here. So welcome to the program, Kent. Thank you for coming back on.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Henrik, and happy holidays, everyone.
Absolutely. Happy holidays. You've been having a good time during the holidays, relaxing or keeping busy, working?
Yes, I've been working on my forthcoming book, and I'm about 90 pages into the manuscript at this point. And, of course, I've taken some time off to relax and enjoy my son and his company and the company of my family and friends as well.
Absolutely. This is a time to take a few days off. That's absolutely right. Need to relax once in a while, too, not only working and working and working. But I'm glad to hear that the book is coming along and that it's in the progress of, you know, of work, so to speak. Okay, Kent, you know, our topic here today, the coming financial crash, the report that you wrote back in 2005. And I think it's a quite appropriate topic, too, and the timing of it, of course, too. Just going into the business section of BBC here today and just reading a few headlines here, basically, it says, you know, are we going to see a major economic slowdown in 2008? Another one was home prices fall for the second month in the UK. Another one was U.S. home sales fall to a 12-year low. And even financial, you know, reporters from the BBC is kind of predicting or slash forecasting some kind of change, I guess, in 08 here. So, you know, the question is if this is a downward spiral or, you know, will the bubble pop or will it slowly kind of lose all its air and maybe even another market will inflate instead, just like the housing market kind of did. What do you think, Kent?
Well, here in the United States, we're in serious trouble at this point. Our deficit federally is well over $9 trillion at this point. Excuse me. And with a $9 trillion federal debt, there really is no chance of that being paid off. Furthermore, we have this escalation of these wars in the Middle East, the surge and the expansion of the war into Iran, possibly into Pakistan, which they announced on the heels of the assassination on the 27th of December. So those factors alone are deeply concerning to those of us who understand the financial fundamentals. And, you know, Henrik, the whole idea behind all of this, and the reason I wrote this report, is because people are not taught correctly about finance in school. And they are not taught what I refer to in the report as real-world math. It's this theoretical, you know, algebra, geometry, trigonometry, physics, and things like this. They don't teach you about home mortgages. They don't teach you how to balance your checkbook or balance a business ledger. You know, so I wanted to talk about those issues in this report and also to talk about, you know, the truth about inflation as well. Inflation is represented to us as the result of a supply and demand issue, and actually what it relates to is it relates to the excess of printing of money beyond the gross domestic product, which is the value of all the goods and services produced by a country within a year's time.
I mean, you you were speaking about what you call kind of real world math, and in your report that you wrote, I know that you actually tied this together with something that Charlotte Thompson Isebeat wrote about, or stated, I guess, during she was one of the, I think if she was an economic advisor during the Reagan era or something like that, if I'm not mistaken, and she wrote about this kind of plan that she called the dumbing down of America. She also has a book out on this issue or subject. Basically about, you know, the students aren't, you know, allowed to, you know, learn about the things that you just talked about how to, you know, how basic economics work. And I guess that this kind of ties in with everything because of the fact that the Federal Reserve System is the way it is. There is an interest there that you know, people shouldn't learn the real math about this stuff, because then the illusion, I guess, of the Federal Reserve would collapse, right?
Yes, that's correct. Now, Mrs. Isebeat, she was part of Ronald Reagan's education department. And what she actually did is one night after hours, she had brought a U-Haul to her office, a U-Haul moving van, and packed it full of documents and reports that she had in her office. She took these home and then later transferred them to a safe place. The very next morning, she resigned from her position, and ever since then, she's been an advocate for this, as you just mentioned, she refers to as the dumbing down of America. In her book, she describes this as the result of an info war against the American people by the government. And she specifically says that this is a war that is fought using psychological methods. It has taken place over a 100-year time frame, and we've heard that mentioned in relation to the war on terror, too. She also mentioned that this was a much more deadly war than any other in which our country has ever been involved. And the reason being for this is that it is much more detrimental to the country as a whole than a war that might take a few years to transpire and run its course. So from there, she also mentions that this is a war that the typical person has no knowledge of whatsoever. Now, when I was in school, and I graduated high school in 1981, I was continuously asking my math teachers you know, why don't you teach real world math?
Mm-hmm.
And they kept answering, well, the reason we, you know, do not cover this is because it's not in the curriculum. It's not mandated by the school board or the state education department. So they had this convenient excuse which pushed off the responsibility from their shoulders to the shoulders of the individuals making and drawing up the curriculum.
Mm, always, yeah. Hm.
Passing the buck, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think that this is connected here? Because I know that, you know, Charlotte Isserbeet, I think this was one from one of your the paragraph in your report that while she was attending a meeting with the Progressive Education Association, the meeting was chaired by Dr. Siegler, I think, one of the Education Committee of the Council on Foreign Relations. So we're back to those guys again, huh?
Yeah. They always seem to have their hands in the midst of these nefarious goings-on.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically the idea here is that people are much easier to take advantage of, financially or otherwise, when they are completely misinformed and, more to the point, completely uninformed about certain issues. For example, with the home mortgage, for instance, you know, they represent interest rate as being, you know, 5, 6, 7%, and they use a mathematical technique which is called compounded interest, and by the time that interest is compounded over that 30 years that the individual holds that mortgage, that 7% suddenly turns into 140% interest.
Hmm.
So in effect, you're paying several times for the same house.
Yeah, of course.
You know, this was the reason why I paid cash for my house.
Hmm. Good idea.
We can talk about that in a little bit too.
Sure. Well, that's a good idea for those who for those who have the cash. I mean, that's not the. I mean, many people don't have it. I mean, how is the kind of the housing market over in the U.S. right now? I know that here in Sweden things are tremendously, you know, overpriced, so to speak. It's the value is off the charts, and many people are, you know, borrowing so much money just to buy an apartment or, you know, what have you, and if this potentially then, you know, if the housing market kind of crash or slowly just devalues, many people are going to end up losing a lot of money because of this. How are things in the U.S.?
Well, here in the U.S., things are pretty bad. First of all, for my house personally, in the last 3 years, the value of my house has dropped 20%.
Mm.
And this is a function of the overstating and the overpumping of this housing bubble, which is something that is going to, at some point, you know, collapse and burst.
You think so? Not just a kind of a slow, you know, slow devaluation of the market, but do you think that this actually will pop at some point?
Yes. In fact, over the past 2 years, also what has happened is we've seen a tremendous increase in bankruptcies related to home mortgages, where people just cannot afford to make their housing payments any longer.
Mm.
And let me give you an example of something I'm talking about here, which would illustrate this. My best friend, his wife, had a marketing job where she was making pretty close to $100,000 a year working for a toy company called Fisher-Price Toys, which is a Buffalo company that was purchased by Mattel a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
She lost her job. The only job she could replace it with was a school teacher job, and she took about a 70 to 75% pay cut in doing so. Because of the former high income that this family had, they have a mortgage that is $1,800 per month. And they are in danger at this point of losing their house outright because they're finding, as the months transpire, bigger and bigger difficulty paying that $1,800 per month off.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned to him back when his wife lost that job, I said, you should dump your house because you're going to end up losing it at some point. And the type of situation that could happen if the worst case scenario does happen would be that you're talking about a 90% default in terms of 9 out of every 10 people, families, losing their homes. About 6 years ago, I made the prediction, because I did see this spiritually with my third eye, that and within the time frame leading up to 2012, we would see multiple families living in a single family home as a result of this collapse of the housing market.
That's pretty interesting. So, I mean, the question here is, of course, why is this happening? And the, you know, the more important question is, I guess, is this allowed to happen for another reason? We've heard so much about the fact that, you know, what we're going to talk about a little bit later about the North American Union, that there is a merging between the countries, and in order for this kind of transition to take place, there is the idea that this might have been kind of you know, put together by think tanks out there that okay, we have to get rid of what is known as the, you know, the middle class in the U.S. and to kind of you know, what do you call it, kind of stabilize, or not stabilize, but kind of make the leaps or the gaps between the countries more even between, I'm talking about between Mexico and U.S. and the Canada now, of course. So do you think, Kent, that this is kind of allowed to happen at this point, or is there, you know, some other reason for this?
Yes, I look at this in the following way. This is both asset confiscation and also the ultimate plan or agenda that appears to me to be at play here behind the scenes is the eventual removal of the right to own private property. And what a perfect way to do it than to have 90% of your people lose their homes.
Yeah.
Because what's going to happen is the titles for these homes are going to be transferred back to the lending bank, and it's just going to create an exponentiated wealth increase in the elite sector of our economy. So yes, it is allowed to happen on purpose, and as you pointed out a moment ago, you know, the Council on Foreign Relations has their hand in this, and whenever they're sniffing around any situation, it's not good for me and you, brother.
You know, you're talking about this the idea also about the value here, and this is something that I kind of want to bring up, because we could tie this, of course, again into the Federal Reserve System that so many people, you know, still don't, you know the truth about how that works and operates, even though, you know, this many movies have been made on this subject. We have Aaron Russo, his latest one, of course, that goes into this, and many more, of course. But also talking about this kind of the false value system that exists right now, and this is kind of almost a tricky thing, because going into it, and when you kind of discover that the entire economic system, at least as it is right now over in the US, is kind of built on an illusion, basically. So kind of a crash of an illusion, kind of that would affect people in reality, so to speak, is pretty, you know, interesting and tricky subject. The question I guess I want to ask to you is, do you think that the root of this problem goes back to, you know, the Federal Reserve System, or can we even, you know, tie this back further to before the Federal Reserve System came into place? I mean, we had the economic crash back in the 20s, late 20s, and then in, I think, 1933, if I remember correctly, the Federal Reserve System was put in place, right?
The Federal Reserve came into being in 1913, I believe.
1913, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So it actually had played a part in the what we refer to as the Great Depression.
Mm.
And what I see happening in the next handful of years is going to make that look like a very small, minor event as compared to the way it's portrayed now as this earth-shattering economic upheaval in the past.
Yeah. Let's see here. You wrote, yeah, exactly, that the U.S. is hopelessly bankrupt, a condition has existed since March 1933. And I guess the kind of, I've heard this too, that the kind of, you know, there's an undercurrent of information going around that the U.S. kind of was bankrupt back in 1933. What can you tell us about that, Kent?
Yeah, a couple of significant events happened in 1933, which was on the tails of the Depression. And during the ending of the Depression is that they confiscated gold from private hands. And this was the generic, like bullion and that type of gold.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking to do this again at this point. Just checking today, gold is $838 an ounce. So with the inverse relationship between gold and the value of the dollar, with this being $838 per ounce, that should give everyone an indication as to the general condition of the dollar right now, which is getting its butt kicked by the euro. And they're going to have to, at some point, dump this currency. The one we have in the U.S. at this point, because they can't keep inflating it at the current rate, they've even stopped reporting on a month-to-month basis the status of the M3 money supply, which is how much money they print. And this is above and beyond the gross domestic product. And this is why when, for instance, you go to the grocery store here in my neighborhood, you know, eggs and other commodities at the grocery store are increasingly expensive. Like, from each visit, the price has been jumping. It's like $6 for a jar of pickles, which is, you know, very expensive and quite outrageous.
Hmm.
And one of the first expressions of inflation usually does occur through the grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And, you know, again, this kind of, we could tie this back to, we could talk about how things actually were in you know, we were talking about kind of seizure of you know, houses or even land or whatever, or assets in different ways. This is kind of a more quiet version, I guess we could say, of what was happening in you know, over in the Soviet when they had their so-called revolution, you know, when so many of the Russians, you know, their assets were being taken from their houses, their land, and things like this. And in a way, I guess we could draw kind of a comparison between the two, but the expression this time is you know, somewhat different, and it isn't, at least not yet, as radical as it was over there. But what you're saying here, if I mean, if 9 out of 10 people potentially could lose their house, that's you know, that's a great tragedy, and a lot of upheaval, of course, would be a natural reaction to a thing like that, you know.
Yes, absolutely. That will cause social chaos in this country. And when you combine this with the tremendous influx of the illegal aliens from Mexico, you know, you have a situation which is ripe for complete civil war here. So we're in a very precarious position in many, many different ways.
Exactly. And
I also thought it was interesting, a comment that Alan Greenspan, the former longtime chairman of the Federal Reserve, made in 1966 when he was just an economist, and he was telling the truth at that point. This was before his involvement with the Federal Reserve, and he was a little more open to making honest statements. And he said, quote, "In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect savings from confiscation through inflation. There's no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holding illegal, as was done in the case of gold. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there be no way for the owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare statists' tirades against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the confiscation of wealth."
So, I mean, one of the things that we could also, I guess, tie into this discussion to get some perspective, whether or not, if we kind of go away from the idea that what is happening is you know, is bad, or, you know, for other people because of their agenda, it's good or whatever they consider this to be. But, I mean, the bankers have set up the system from day one, basically. It's their monetary system. I know that there was attempts, of course, if we talk about the U.S. In history, to kind of begin printing. We have the story of the greenbacks and all this, of course, to kind of go away from the Federal Reserve system. So I guess the question is, it's their system, and now they're changing it for the reasons of their own, because they're, again, they have their own agenda. And I guess also we could mention that it's, as you said, Kent, this is kind of an interesting time right now too, because we actually have people that I know that you've been looking at, people like Ron Paul, of course, that are actually looking at this idea of actually you know, abolishing basically the Federal Reserve.
And the IRS too.
And the IRS too, exactly. So I mean, the question is, what would a consequence like this be? I mean, how would the, let's say that actually Ron Paul kind of gets in there and he actually does all these things that he says is going to do. What do you think would happen if we compare it to, like, the rest of the world? I mean, at this point, I know that And I don't know the mechanics of this, but China is apparently in some way buying us U.S. debt in order to actually help to stabilize the dollar a little bit. And I guess that they do this because China export most of their goods or products to the U.S., so they don't want to kind of see a total collapse of the dollar, not yet at least. But what do you think would happen if Ron Paul gets in there? Would things be more orderly and stabilized, or would there be a tremendous, you know, upheaval for a short period?
Well, unfortunately, there were two presidents in our history who attempted to remove this type of banking. One was Abraham Lincoln with the greenbacks in the mid-1800s, the 1860s, and the other was John F. Kennedy in the 1960s, about 100 years later. Both of these presidents were assassinated by agents of the bankers for attempting to remove this type of monetary system. So, unfortunately, Henrik, if Ron Paul does get elected and he does attempt, and I say attempt, to remove the Federal Reserve, I would be expecting him to be assassinated at that point. Of course, this would create a tremendous upheaval because he would be a candidate of the people, so to speak, and there would be a tremendous upset and an echo backwards to Kennedy, and which would socially create a big problem as well. So, unfortunately, these ideas are good on the surface, but until we can remove the unlimited wealth that these people have at their beck and call, we're going to have these types of situations where we're just not going to be able to combat what they have set up, which is quite, you know, self-protectionary in a lot of different ways. I'd also like to point out that the Federal Reserve is a private central bank, has private owners, and those owners are the wealthy globalist elitist families from Europe, primarily. And also, what would happen here is, with this type of a situation, you know, they are just going to be further and further entrenched in this self-protection. So it's very difficult to even come up with a plan as to how we would go against these people. I'm at a loss as to how to address that issue personally.
I know that there are people who are actually looking into, you know, alternative currencies. They actually had a kind of a semi-experiment, I guess, of that on a local level on one of the islands outside the west coast here in Sweden, that actually kind of came up with their own currency, basically, where they were kind of exchanging different services, and they had basically, you know, their own currency for this. I think it was referred to as the Lets, if I can remember right. And I don't know if this was in other parts of Europe as well, but I know that it was up here. And this was something that, against at least at the time, legally, they couldn't, the Swedish government or the law system here couldn't do anything about it. But there was, you know, obviously they were kind of having their eyes on it and trying to get rid of it because this was kind of bypassing the economic system. And at that point, I think that they said that if you bypass the economic system, then you're breaking the law. You don't have, you know, they can't put out the, you know, take the taxes from it and all of that stuff. So, I mean, there are things to do kind of on a local level. But since, again, I'm going back to that idea, since the bankers from day one kind of set up the system, they also set up the rules for that system, and then they have infiltrated that into the law system, and it's all interconnected. So I think on a big scale like that, it's obviously very difficult, as you say, at this time to kind of counteract that and do something about it on that level. But locally, that there potentially could be you know, solutions to this. What do you think about that?
Well, here in the U.S., they have a similar thing, which are called Liberty Dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a gold and silver-backed private currency, which as per the U.S. Constitution, citizens have the right to do this. But as you pointed out, which happened in your country, is happening here as well. They are doing their utmost to remove this and to not promote it and to not allow it to gain any favor or popularity with the people.
Mm-hmm.
The other troubling thing about the Federal Reserve is that, as I mentioned a moment ago, with it being a private central bank, that is one of the tenets of the Communist Manifesto.
Mm.
So this, at this point, all 10 of those planks of the Communist Manifesto are currently in some stage of development in our country here.
Mm. Hmm. Yep.
A lot of people have a very hard time coming to grips with the reality of this.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, that is the case, and again, many people unfortunately seem to have to, they have to have a big chaotic, you know, collapse or crash or turmoil in order to wake up from the system. And as things are right now, that seems to be kind of where things are leading. I mean, there have been many wars, you know, fought in by the U.S. military abroad, different agendas here and there, Korea, Vietnam, we can, you know, line them all up, so to speak, here. And, you know, a consequence of this also, I mean, there's been kind of an empire building going on, and for, you know, whatever reason, the top bankers or the elite have right now, they want to, you know, abolish that system, get rid of that empire of the U.S., and try to merge it into another system. That is, of course, it's kind of the idea of the New World Order, of course, that want to globalize this more in that way. But I mean, the question is what the consequences of this transition period might be. I mean, do you think that they could have interest in actually creating kind of a civil war type scenario in the U.S. Right now? Again, we could connect this with all the ideas of you know, their reports what they call, you know, unreported news stories about, you know, prison camps in the U.S. There is, you know, even video games, if we want to go that far, that actually is about U.N. troops basically going into the U.S., you know, and trying to,
yeah,
you know, restore order, what have you. There are so many things like the small facets here and there that kind of hints towards potentially where this might be going. What's your, you know, thoughts and ideas about all this?
Well, I agree with all that. It does give them the excuse to roll out things like martial law and the arresting and detaining of undesirables, which would be the truth tellers on the internet primarily at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I did mention a few minutes ago about the idea of a civil war happening, and I do see that as being a very real possibility here because of the destabilization of both the economic infrastructure and also with the influx of all these illegals aliens coming in,
mm.
You know, that creates, as I mentioned a moment ago, you know, social chaos. And that is a very good circumstance for creating a civil war out of nothing.
Mm.
In fact, it's called balkanizing a country. And what they do is they will split the larger nation into smaller warring factions. So it would be the Mexican Reconquistas or the Reconquerors coming to fight and take back what they look upon as land that was taken from them by our country.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, you know, one of the bases of a civil war. The economic situation would be looking to create an economic parity between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada,
mm-hmm.
which would enable them to roll out like the Amero currency
sure. yeah.
of the North American Union.
Yeah.
And all of these things are well within possibility and within their power to bring about.
Absolutely. Exactly. And that is where you know, it seems to be going right now. Again, this has to do with the idea that, again, as you mentioned, this isn't a single thing that they're playing. I mean, if they consider this to be a war that you mentioned previously and the overtaking of a country, or what even potentially some people would say the, you know, returning of the country. After all, the U.S. broke free from U.K. or Britain back then, and this might have been a long process for them in order to, you know, take back what they consider to be theirs. And, I mean, there are, again, ideas about that there has been very, you know, the war process has been slowed down, and now it's you know, across, you know, several hundred years instead, and this is just the extension of that war, what we're seeing now. And again, this ties in all of this, the economic side, the law issues, and potentially even some kind of war scenario ties into this idea of the SPP, I guess, or the North American Union, of course, but also the what you call the Security and Prosperity Partnership, the SPP. And you mentioned that actually this recently was defeated and is dead for now, but that they will try to, you know, bring this back again.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little about the SPP. What is it, and how was it, you know, defeated?
Well, basically what it is, or what it was a series of secret meetings and proposals by governmental officials from Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. who were participating in drawing up what would be the basis for a treaty, is the way I look at it.
Mm.
And from there, what happened is, once word got out about this, to the truth movement and the patriot movements, there was so much of an outcry, and people had literally barraged the website, spp.org, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, email that said, we don't want this, we're not interested in this, and it was the public pressure that actually stopped this. And some of the politicians that were involved had kind of lost their nerve, so to speak, for this time around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the way these people operate is they will bring this proposal back.
Of course.
It may be exactly the way it is now. It may be slightly different. It might be called something different,
exactly.
But it might be, you know, exactly as it stands with the original proposal with a different name.
Always, absolutely.
You know, And they try to sneak these things by in these ways so that they try to distract people and fool them and kind of give them the idea, yes, you defeated us, you're so smart, and here we are, we're coming back again for the third, fourth, fifth time, we're going to bring this proposal about, and we have to be diligent and fight this every single time that they reintroduce these proposals, as they did with the amnesty for the illegal aliens through Numbers USA, the nonprofit group of which I am a member. We defeated this like five or six different times, this amnesty for the Mexican illegals, and they just keep resubmitting the same proposal. So what I expect to happen.
Gold finger, he's the man with a Midas touch, a spider's touch, such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. You feel for a golden girl knows when he's kissed her. It's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl,